Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 348. This is the punny edition of the pun day edition. You have Sunday, you have Tuesday, and now you have pun day. So I think it's actually a little bit off for the reference I'm going for, but still. Nonetheless, I seem to be lying through my teeth lately. Today is going to be the second Burning Daylight episode in a row. We recorded the makeup edition on Monday afternoon, and then due to some family complications, I'm again home on Wednesday, and my wife suggested I attempt to record a podcast in the afternoon yet again. So here I am, and there all of you are. Hopefully everybody's having a great week thus far. Mine's kind of a non-starter of a week. It's kind of weird. I haven't been to work yet. I took Monday and Tuesday off because I knew it was going to happen, and then the wife was a little ill after she had some oral surgery yesterday. So she had to stay home again today, so I stayed home to kind of take care of her. Things are on the mend, everything's going, but it's just been an absolute circus around here. We did have some fantastic things happen yesterday besides the wonderful oral surgery. We also got in our coffee roaster, the West Bend Poppery, the original one, the 1500 water. That's a popcorn popper that I've been going to try and use for a coffee roaster and heard that it works, and apparently it does because I'm drinking the coffee right now. And I also got a box of coffee in from Sweet Maria's, so it is going to be a fantastic couple of weeks here at the podcast. We're going to talk about that just a little bit later on. Just wanted to remind you that you are, in fact, listening to the Caffeination Podcast, as if there was any doubt. We are lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. I've been told I say that a little quickly, but we are the Caffeination Podcast. That is caffeination.com. So I kind of figured it was a little bit of an easy sell. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All of the member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and everybody is listed up over at techpodcasts.com. We're also participating in the Summer of Podcasts contests on over at podcastmadness.com. We are now entering into the second week of the contest, but don't take my word for it. Take Jeffrey Powers of Geekazine Podcast, the architect of this massive contest. Let's hear his word on it so that you can actually kind of get a little bit of an understanding of who's doing it today and all that. So here's Jeffrey Powers from the Geekazine Podcast.
Hey everybody, this is Jeffrey Powers, and this is the Summer of Podcast contest. This week, the contributors are Jesus Geek, Geek News Central, my show, Geekazine, and Buana.org Radio. Just go to podcastmadness.com, listen to their shows, enter in the codes that you hear from their shows, and you can be eligible for some great prizes. Thanks to all the podcasts that are being contributors to the show, and good luck in the Summer of Podcast contest.
All right, thanks, Jeffrey. Again, that's head on over to Podcast Madness, and you too can get all your fun in there. You just listen to the different shows. You get the code words. Everybody has a unique code words. No matter what it is, you go back to the site, you enter it in, and then you can win some really cool prizes. Just head on over there and check that out. And then before we get too much further here in today's episode, I did want to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. There's a lot of things that you can do with GoToMeeting that really make it a valuable resource for any company. You can cut travel costs in these tough economic times. You can eliminate flight costs, hotel costs, gas costs. It's everything else out there like that. You can meet with anyone right in front of your desk. You don't have to worry about it. And it also automatically integrates rather with Outlook, so you don't have to worry about synchronizing different contacts or anything else. It's incredibly easy to navigate through the lovely world of meetings. I mean, nobody really likes to go to meetings. You want to make it as easy and as simple as possible. So my solution to you is to try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. You must visit www.goToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.goToMeeting.com/tech podcasts for a free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the here on today's show. They're allowing us to do all kinds of cool stuff here, so a big thank you to them, and I highly suggest you give their products a real good work over. It's a wonderful resource for any company out there. All right, we have a ton of stuff to go over here today on the show. I don't have... Now, you might be asking why this is called the Punny Edition, or why we're calling this Pun Day. If you've ever read a book by Spider Callahan, called Callahan's Chronicles, it's actually a series of short stories. He's a science fiction writer. It's about a mythical bar called Callahan's Place, and they have different contests and everything, but long story short, too late. They actually have something called Pun Day Night Contests, where just things start reeling off off, and there's a topic. It's a big circle drinking game, basically. There's a topic, and they go around the circle, and so, like, let's just say the topic is trees, and the first person would say, "Leave me alone." The other one would say, "I think you're barking up the wrong tree," and it would go around and around and around with these really horrible and nasty puns. If you couldn't figure out a pun for the topic, then you were kicked out of the circle. If at the end of the night, the Pun Day Master actually got all of his drinks paid for. Now, again, this is a book, and it's a very cool idea at that, but it just so happens that a lot of the different stuff and the snark that I usually work into the episodes for the show notes ended up being really bad puns. So that's why this is Pun Day. I'm feeling a little bit punchy, and I'm rocking some coffee that I roasted in my very own backyard. So it's my show. I can do what I want. All right, we're going to move right on into the Geekcraft section here at the Caffeination Podcast with one tiny little thing. If you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, please feel free to fire one off to caffeination@gmail.com, and I promise you I will attempt to get back to you as quickly as possible. All right, now, Once and Forever happened today, and we all missed it, especially if you're listening to this program and you're talking about it, even if you're reading the article that I linked to, up to. But 1234-56 on 789 is a once-in-a-lifetime, or actually it's a once-in-a-forever opportunity, because every moment only happens once and forever. And you have to wait another 100 years, so I'm going to be quite old the next time this comes around. But it's basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is the big long number that they got going for you there. So it's, I thought it was pretty interesting. I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was funny. It's a little bit of a one-off. Next little thing we have up for here is Google Apps is now out of beta. So yes, Gmail is no longer in beta after, I don't know, 5 years? Yes, 5 years of beta. You can read the full story over at the Google blog, but they are no longer considering it a beta service. They're saying that it is fully functional, up and running, and the only thing that I've noticed is that they played around with the tags a little bit more recently. So other than that, I think they're making a dedicated push towards having Google Apps as being a viable alternative, and they don't want to overuse the beta thing, because, you know, 5 years isn't long enough. All right, next little piece of news that you need to know: Pandora is no longer free, even though Gmail is. Well, technically speaking, it isn't. If you are in the they've come to an understanding with the licensing people out there. They're still going to pay higher licensing fees for every single song that they play than any other radio form out there, but especially if you're in the United States, because I don't think it works outside of the U.S. It's pretty ridiculous that they're being kind of raked over the coals like this. However, the fee structure for it is, if you listen to more than 40 hours of Pandora a month, they're going to request, actually mandate, that you now pay 99 cents for the month. I would volunteer to pay 99 cents a month just in general, just in case I happen to come near the 40 hours per month. I'm not even sure if I do. I probably listen to a decent amount in work, so I'm probably going to end up hitting that. But I would think that, you know, if that's all it's going to take, that the top 10% of the users are going to have to pay that, then, you know, I would gladly fork over the dough. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that they're being kind of raked over by the licensing authority, but I really kind of wanted to pass along this because, you know, hey, if there's anybody out there who really enjoys Pandora's service, you might want to make sure that you sign up for an account over there. Maybe just sign up for I don't know what their super special accounts cost a month, but I'll definitely sign up for the 99 cents one. That's a losable change kind of account. All right, and then another little thing coming out from Google. Google's apparently going to have an OS, despite all the facts that they've, denied it left, right, and sideways up until this point. Google is announcing Google Chrome OS. So it's going to be a netbook-ready OS. The idea behind it is that you're supposed to boot your computer up and be on the internet in minutes. You're not supposed to develop any applications for the actual OS itself. They're all supposed to work on a web platform, so everything's supposed to work on the internet. It's supposed to be a very network-connected vehicle. I like this idea. I think that they should have just thrown their weight behind any one of the number of free alternatives that are out there. But if they can do free, and apparently they're going to say that it's going to be open source, I'm not sure when they're going to be opening up the source to it, but it's really cool. So they're calling it the Google Chrome Operating System, or GCOS, so that's going to be fun to see. That's not going to come out until the second half of 2010. So you basically have a full year before you're going to see this thing out on the shelves. And their idea behind, since it's going to be at netbooks and stuff like that, I see this as being a very interesting OS to install for, like, kiosk solutions or something else like that out there, especially if they're really going to deal as much with security as they're saying that they are. I mean, this is going to be a perfect kiosk OS, in theory. So, it's going to be kind of fun to follow that one along. All right, moving right along. Exploit or cover-up. This is a story from over at ISC, the Internet Storm Center over at sans.org, talking about OpenSSH rumors. Now, there's one of two things here. This is a very geeky topic, so obviously if you don't understand what I'm saying, don't worry about it because you're not in the minority here. There's quite a few people who really don't understand it. Just suffice it to say that there's a protocol, a way that one machine can talk to another called OpenSSH, or rather it's called SSH, the way that this thing goes all work together. One of the softwares that's installed on Linux and a lot of other machines out there is called OpenSSH. It's a version of that. It's a way that it's a gateway to that protocol. That being said, you have to upgrade your version of OpenSSH periodically as soon as new fixes come out. There's a rumor of an unsubstantiated zero day, which basically means this thing hasn't even been published out there, but there's a way that people can get into OpenSSH on the that is fixed by the current upgrade of OpenSSH. So the long story short on this one, I know again it's yet too late, but there is an exploit that's out there, a way that people can get around any security that you have for anything but the newest version of OpenSSH. Now the fun thing that's in here is that they actually have a whole lot of really technical stuff in there in update number one. These are from the handler's diaries over at the Internet Storm Center. The update number two is they actually got a mysterious email from an anonymous user that said, hey, I've heard that this exploit is actually being used in the wild, and the various unsubstantiated changes and charges, and he basically said you should upgrade to the latest version of OpenSSH, just saying. And I can't confirm nor deny, so somebody really trying to do a little bit of cloak and dagger without really having the wherewithal to seemingly do it. And then the third update that they have is where it really gets interesting. On the one hand, they have a bunch of other emails that are actually corroborating the story, and then there's a second batch of emails that are saying that this is all been an elaborate ruse put out there to cover up a data security breach that was a directly result of a sysadmin not upgrading. So somebody was using an older version of OpenSSH, their system was compromised, and as a cover-up, the person's putting out there that there was an unreleased breach in the software, and that's how it happened. So that's going to be kind of interesting. I know it's an incredibly kind of dense and geeky subject for those of you that aren't in the know. That one's all over now. Now we have an even more interesting and yet terrifying idea, although I kind of figured this one would be the case. Social Security numbers are apparently easily able to be deduced from public data. All of your Social Security numbers are recycled. Everybody out there, if you are in the United States and you have a Social Security number, it is recycled. Somebody died before you could get that number. There's also certain geographic constraints to the nine-digit key to your life. Depending on where you were born in the country, you're supposed to be assigned a specific first digit. So in the northeastern quadrant of the country, although I know a lot of people where this is not exactly the case, you're supposed to have a 1 in front of your Social Security number. I think it's supposed to be a 2 if you're in the southeastern. I'm not sure what all the other numbers that are out there. I think California is a 9, but so it's kind of interesting, and you take that. There was a bunch of people that were actually able to seduce. If you take the death master file, which is a publicly available document that contains all the Social Security numbers and birth information for people who have died, computer scientists from Carnegie Mellon University have found a pattern that they were able to actually guess real people's Social Security numbers by comparing the death master file with the city and date of your birth. And they were able to get... They said in just 2 attempts, the person was able to guess the first 5 digits of a Social Security number with 60% of people born within 1989 and 2003. With fewer than 1,000 attempts, they could get the entire 9-digit number. That's 8.5% of the people that they surveyed. That is scary. So, Social Security numbers are possibly going to be on the way out, or this could be just yet another situation where damning evidence is swept under the floor, swept under the rug, or drilled a hole and then poured into a hole in the floor. Who knows at this point, but this is the kind of thing where somebody will say, hey, but it took them 1,000 attempts to get it. As long as you have software that, you know, takes for less than that, yes, but if you have a botnet, if you have a collection of malware programs that are out there, they easily number more than 1,000. So each one of them doing a different digit along the roll, along the tumbling little chain there, they could get somebody's exact Social Security number quicker than I can finish recording recording this episode, which is, I mean, they could probably get everybody who's listened to this episode and their social security numbers. As long as they have your birthday and the whole nine yards, that's it. Game over, man. So it's going to be interesting to see what people do with this. All right, moving on to something that's a little bit less scary, but not by much. The thing that should not be a Wiimote-controlled 15-ton robotic arm. You heard me correctly. There is a giant metal claw that somebody has found a way to hack together to control with a Wiimote. And they're saying that over at Hackaday that this is not necessarily a lightning and thunder kind of revelation here. They're saying it just uses the pitch and yaw and roll to actually move the remote. Although anybody likes playing with giant robotic arms, it would be actually kind of funny if you could just point the Wiimote at something and have it grab it. I think that would be a little bit more cool. Although we're getting one step closer to Mech Warriors, so you don't actually have to have a joystick that's attached to anything with this plan or with this situation. All you have to have is a Bluetooth connection to a PC, and you too can run your own very giant Wiimote metal arm of destruction. All right, moving right along, we are going quick as a bunny here on today's show. I'm just trying to plow through because we have a ton of stuff to talk about. Less colors, more batteries. This high enough def. That's the way that we're rolling on this one. They're basically saying that OLEDs, the organic light emitting diodes that are out there, they're currently replacing standard edition liquid crystal displays that are out there. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly where you'll see these things, but signage that's outdoor signage is being replaced. I mean, there's a lot of different places, especially cell phones and stuff like that, where since it's lower power absorption, they're trying to find a way to increase the use of your battery and try and make your battery last a little bit longer, because battery technology is still kind of lagging behind, shall we say. However, OLEDs, which doesn't really roll off the tongue, and every time I say it, I have to do a little bit of a staccato thing there so I can actually separate the letters out. OLED has an interesting feature. Apparently, they can display more colors than the human eye can see. In fact, more than colors than the human brain can totally comprehend. So, being the case, they're able to reduce by 40 to 60% the amount of colors that the OLEDs actually produce and save even further on energy. So that's going to be kind of interesting to look at. They're saying that there's no loss of clarity, there's no loss of definition with this, but they're trying to make use of the different color and visible color space algorithms that are out there to try and limit the amount of power and things that the LEDs are even going to attempt to produce. So that's kind of fun and cool, and it's going to be interesting to see where that ends up. Now we really start the bad puns. I'm going to just say it's urine power, tanks a lot. Yep, that's correctly. Adam Curry's dream of one day being able to do number one into his gas tank is getting closer. Apparently, there's a bunch of scientists who found a way to turn urine into hydrogen, which apparently isn't that hard, but you can blame people in Ohio for this one. Specifically, people at Ohio University have found a way to efficiently extract hydrogen from urine. So they're saying this is going to provide a cheap, renewable fuel source for vehicles, and it's a good use for the most abundant waste on Earth. So, you heard it here first, folks, well, possibly elsewhere as well, but you're eventually going to be able to make a pit stop and make a pit stop. So it's I wonder where that's actually going to come out. So it's going to be strange, to say the least. I don't really know if it's going to produce any odor or anything. There's only so much you can talk about on a family-friendly show without just making the connection and letting you do your own dirty work, as the case may be. All right, next up here from over at Device.com is Pocket Rocket. The world's fastest RC car goes 161 miles an hour. This, of course, is a Schumacher because, I mean, hey, all things that go that fast should be named Schumacher. But this is a radio-controlled car. It's less than 3 feet long, and it's called the Pocket Rocket. So he's saying that this... eventually be able to hit speeds of 200 miles an hour. I have no clue exactly how long it takes to charge this thing, but it all runs on electricity. So if we can make a RC car running on electricity hit 161 miles an hour, why is the Chevy Volt just now coming out with a plug-in car that's still not going to take the place of a gas engine entirely? So, I mean, I don't know. 161 miles an hour, I could get to work in 6 seconds, maybe 2 seconds. I don't know. It's kind of fun to see technology like this, and fun. Kind of, it's one of those areas where you're looking at it and say, I really never thought that those two kind of things would situate together. You know, I never thought that world record would exist, but that's what makes the Guinness Book of World Records so interesting to read. It's like, wait a minute, somebody thought to do that? So there you go, and here we are. All right, next little thing we got up for you here is a toy called Water Walkers. The way that I have a hamster dance in a pool, and I want these, definitely. These things are roughly $700 a piece. They are giant, clear, inflatable spheres that you actually ride on the inside. They have, I guess, tiny little ribbed indentations on the ball. You drop them into pools. You sit inside them. They said that they have had people that are 250 pounds, and I don't know how tall you can actually be before you can max out the inside of these. But the idea is that you'll put these in a giant pool, and that you can have people run around and kind of play little bumper cars. I really want to play around with these. It looks pretty kind of cool. It looks pretty fun. So it's $710 each for the inflatable sphere, and then you have $199 for the blower. Well, you know what? I have a tiny little air compressor in the garage, and I'm pretty sure that I can just wait a while. But the $710 for just a big inflatable beach ball is kind of a little bit much. I don't know how long you can actually stay in them either, because I mean that's a limited air supply. It's not like you can have holes in there that you can have in there, because I mean seriously, you're running around on the water. So if you have holes in them, then there's going to be water that leaks in. So there might be like a time limit, like a 5-minute thing. But you could probably see something like this on American Gladiators in a couple months. I just thought it was really cool. All right, now the next thing up here, this is Fact or Fiction. I'm not entirely sure whether or not this is real, but this is a USB chainsaw. There is now, I think we should put a moratorium at this point on USB gadgets, because there is nothing else you can do. That's right, you can now fight zombies as long as you have a laptop and a USB cord. They're calling this the iSaw, the world's first USB-powered chainsaw. It appears to be roughly the size of a keyboard long. So I'm saying it's roughly, I don't know, maybe 32 inches long? Or no, that's significantly longer. So it might be less than 24 inches long. I don't even know. So pick your keyboard up. It's around that size. It's too early in the day for suppositions. And not apparently too early to stutter like a goofball, but still. All right, so they have a bunch of demonstrations. Apparently, it's going to be shipping in fall of 2009, so get your orders in now. Next little thing we have for you here, Ryanair, the second airline that is attempting to have passengers stand on flights. So, you know what? I kind of think this is ridiculous. At this point, you get the extra bag fees, and now, unless the ticket is dirt cheap, like $6 to stand in the aisle, I hate sitting on airplanes. I can't imagine standing would be any safer. And then you move right along to a really bad power... thing. It's like there's one gentleman out there who's not standing for his treatment on United, but I'm chunk. He's actually singing. Oh, wow. It gets even worse. There's a gentleman out there by the name of David Carroll, and he has a band called the Sons of Maxwell. They were apparently traveling from Halifax, Nova Scotia to Nebraska for a one-week tour, and while they were at their layover in Chicago, somebody on the seat behind him said, oh, my God, the people out there are throwing guitars. And which point they all looked outside and they saw their guitar cases being thrown roughly by the people who were on the tarmac moving luggage from one place to another. A couple of them dropped, and he said, okay, that's pretty rough. So he tried telling people in Chicago they passed between three people and no dice. No way to get out there and make sure everything was okay. Tried telling people when he got back, said he'd have to report the incident when he got back to Halifax. Long story short, yet again, his $3,500 Taylor guitar was broken to the point where it needed $1,200 in repairs just to get it back to a semi-playable state. He went through every channel he could find until finally he was told in no uncertain terms that United would not be paying for it, Air Canada would not be paying for it, despite the fact that, you know, they were the originating flight and they worked with United, so he's vowed never to fly United again, and he's written a song called United Breaks Guitars, which is a fantastic song.
I flew United Airlines on my way to Nebraska. The plane departed Halifax, connecting in Chicago's O'Hare. While on the ground, a passenger said from the seat behind me, my God, they're throwing guitars out there. Brand and I exchanged a look, best described as terror, at the action on the tarmac, and knowing whose projectiles these would be. So before I left Chicago, I alerted three employees who showed complete indifference towards me. United, United, you broke my Taylor guitar. United, United, some big help you are. You broke it, you should fix it. You're liable to just admit it. I should have flown with someone else or gone by car. 'Cause United breaks guitars.
And that's the about this where the song goes. It goes on for another couple minutes, actually a 4-minute and 36-second long rendition there called United Breaks Guitars. It's ridiculous that he had to go to these lengths, but it's fantastic that he was able to share it with everybody. So I wanted to play a nice long clip so you could kind of get the whole story right from the musician's mouth. So I wish the guy the best of luck actually getting to the end of that. And I think this is a great way to actually fight the man on this. All right, you can also actually read his blog post, which gives you the entire thing, long details and everything, so you can head on over there and check that out, which is at davidcarrollmusic.com, so you can check all that information. Life is Lego, or Lego is life, I'm not quite sure, but The Great Order of the Universe, an original publication way back in the day by Democritus, was kind of shifted into a interesting little treaty on Lego constructs. So they're using 2x4 bricks, and they're showing the different 25 ways in which the two 2x4 bricks can actually interface together. There's a wonderful little bit of poetry at the bottom, so I just wanted to kind of push it out there because I thought it was fantastic. If I can, I'm going to print this out and put this in my office poster form. That's all I'm saying. Alright, next little thing that we have up for you here is, so you want to be a pirate? The Pirate Party explains their stance, or at least the gentleman who is now in the, Christian Eggstrom, who is the representative for the Pirate Party in the European Union Parliament, is put out a interesting little article from over at the Financial Times where he explains the position and basically saying that they think that it's ridiculous the copyright law is being pushed forward and used against what it should originally have been used for. The example they give is actually an incredibly good one. They say, if you search for Elvis Presley in Wikipedia, you find a lot of text and a few pictures that are cleared for distribution, but you find no music, no film clips, and due to copyright restrictions, we think that the common cultural heritage is not ours at all. Now, the article goes beyond that. It actually says a couple other different things. It makes a lot better use of its time that I can make time actually attempting to explain all this. So they're talking about Linux, Wikipedia, and a bunch of other sources that are out there that are using the economy of free to actually further the cultural heritage that's out there. And they're saying that, yes, there are legitimate examples of people abusing copyright, but that there really needs to be reform in both copyright and patent law because they're harming innovation going forward. So I highly suggest you head on over to the Financial Times and check that out. It's an incredibly interesting look inside what they think. And you know what? I kind of wish we had parties like this here in the United States where they're just single-issue parties that where they put their information out there, they get that representation into the governing bodies, and hopefully get a little bit of change passed through. Because it's so hard in a two-party system to actually try and find one party that agrees with absolutely everything you want to do. So that way, if you feel really strongly about something, you can kind of go in on that. You don't have to worry about the person's views on the other things because it's not really going to matter. That's what they're there to push forward. So who knows what that's going to do. All right, moving right along because we have a little bit of information here in the food and caffeinated bits. That about wrapped up the Geek Cruft section here. Just a quick little rundown in case you are wondering where this podcast is because you happen to be walking into the room and somebody else is listening to this. They have great taste, first of all. Second of all, this is located over at www.caffination.com, and you can send any comments, feedback, or suggestions over to caffeination@gmail.com. Or we highly suggest you head on up to the Caffeination homepage, and if you see the little button up at the top says as Friends of the Caffeination. You can click that, sign in, and with your OpenID, Google, AIM, or Yahoo accounts, you can post comments directly to the blog without having to log in. There's no captchas or anything if you do it that way. It's much easier. And we're building a tiny little community of people who like the Caffeination. So I highly suggest you head on over there and click the button up at the top. All right, if you head into the Food and Caffeinated Bits, especially if you get the show notes in your email or anything else like that, you can see that today's coffee was roasted in my very own backyard, and the second batch looked incredibly good. That's it's really fun. I'm still playing around with it. The second batch was a little bit light for my tastes, but it looked better than the first batch. The first batch was very over roasted. I haven't yet tried it, but I think it's much more of a Viennese roast or a French roast. It's not quite black, but it's incredibly dark brown. So, and it's oily, so I'm thinking that's more along the lines of like an espresso or something like that. Although I've heard from most people that single origin coffees, where this is actually Colombian, do a lot worse when it comes to actually trying to pick out the best flavors for an espresso. They're much more along the lines of drip brew coffee and stuff like that. So you can head on over to Twitcher and actually see those. Next little thing we have up for you here is cotton candy toothpicks. Well, cotton candy flavored toothpicks. The little tagline that they put up there over at Nerd Approved is approved by 9 out of 10 carnies. I don't know why you would need flavored toothpicks, but apparently you can get a set of two of these things for $5, and they're flavored like cotton candy, which may or might not get old. Second little thing we have up for you here is a beer can ammo belt. You too can tailgate in force with one of these. They're little neoprene sleeves that allows you to get a six-pack across your back, chest, or wherever else you need to, just in case you feel like bringing the party with you Rambo style. So I thought it was just really kind of funny and cool, but I haven't found a way. There's no price tag listed on there. I clicked through the articles, and I just couldn't find it, so I wanted to pass it along because I still thought the product itself was awesome. Next little thing I have up for you here is El Paso Times put an article out there that said the Central Appraisal District has apparently one of the different bodies within their governing council over there has put out a budget for this year, and they're in their $12.4 million budget, they're spending $7,000 on coffee. And apparently it was rejected by city council because $7,000 is pretty ridiculous. I want to know if this is an entire year, how many people are in the department. And, you know, hey, in tough economic times, maybe the department shouldn't be providing coffee. But I always think a department should provide a coffee, even though I provide my own, because I'm a department of one, at least in my little area. So I thought this was crazy. I thought it was funny, and they're saying that the budget was bloated. The really kind of sad thing about the entire story, and then we're going to move along, is that apparently, even though they denied the budget, it was largely a symbolic measure and didn't really matter. So the budget's still going through. There you go. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is I'm not really sure who all this affects, but if you have a Black & Decker Space Maker coffee machine, they have been recalled, because if you put the thing in the wrong way and they can the water chamber can become slightly out of sorts, then you can get scalded water pudding onto you. Now, I understand that things need to be recalled when they're broken, but, you know, if you don't use a coffee maker correctly, you're going to get burned because the hot water or coffee comes out the top in different places where it's not supposed to because you're not using it correctly. So they're saying that this unit has a defect that allows it to more easily go off track and allow this to happen. So you can head on over there and check the article out to see if you actually have one of these. The only model numbers that are being recalled are ODC440, ODC440B, ODC450, and ODC460. So you can head on over there and check out. This is from over brewedcoffee.com. And then the last little thing, that I wanted to give you one incredibly bad pun. An inflatable turkey is nothing but foul play. Don't know why you would need this. Maybe you have a vegetarian in the house who you wanted to scare a little bit, but this looks like a fully roasted turkey, yet it's an inflatable thing. It's only $12, so have at it. I thought it was interesting and funny, so I thought I wanted to pass it along. That about wraps it up here for today's Caffeination Podcast. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. It's been kind of a great... this has been a much better solution recording in the day than trying to do something at 2 a.m. later on today. So thank you so much for listening. If you're looking for this podcast... It can be found with, along with all of its episodic friends over at www.caffination.com. That is caffination.com. And comments and feedbacks are caffination@gmail.com. And that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.